snapshots of Jesus. Just a little background. I am from around this area. I was raised about 80 miles north of here near Sioux City, Iowa, in Les Mars. I don't know if anyone knows that town, the home of Blue Bunny Ice Cream, and also the home of Lauren Sanney, the former director of the Navigators. He was raised there for his first 16 years. I went to Iowa State University to play baseball, and I thought that I was God's gift to baseball and to Iowa State University, and I saw a sign for a Christian organization when I got to college, and I thought I had to go to that meeting. It looked like a good speaker, a good topic. The sign was well made. I thought I should go to that meeting. And then another voice inside me said, "No way are you going to that meeting." I was running away from God because I was away from home for the first time and doing stuff I should not have been doing and thinking stuff I should not have been thinking. And I determined I was not going to go anywhere near meetings like that. And I was raised in a church-going family, but I had this idea that if I could do good and do enough good, I would probably go to heaven. And I did good. I did a lot more good than a lot of the baseball-playing buddies I hung out with. I didn't smoke as much or drink as much or chase as many women as they did, so I thought if there's a heaven, I'm probably going. But I wasn't going to go to that meeting. A couple months later, a grad student in swine nutrition came to my door and asked if he could talk to me about spiritual things. He was from my Presbyterian church background. I liked everything he had to say except the part about Ephesians 2:8 and 9, "For by grace are you saved through faith." And that was what turned the whole tide for me. So that was a long time ago. Wish I could say I've never sinned since. I was drafted by the Baltimore Orioles and the Minnesota Twins to play baseball, but I signed with the Navigators. And suddenly 41 years went past. But I'm delighted to be with you this morning. Let's take our Bibles and look at John chapter 6. And just a little bit of background about this story. You know this story. It's the feeding of the 5,000. A little background. You have on your map there. And of course, you love map work, don't you? Because it's in the Bible. Any holy Bible has maps in the back, and the maps also are inspired. So we have this map here of the Sea of Galilee, or the Sea of Tiberias. And on the north side, we have this little town called Bethsaida. And it was at Bethsaida where Jesus healed a blind man by putting spittle on his eyes. That's the story at Bethsaida. And it was at Bethsaida where Peter and Andrew and Philip also hung out. A good cross-reference is John 1:40, Jesus meeting Philip and Andrew and Peter for the first time. This was their hometown, Bethsaida, on the top of the Sea of Galilee. Some scholars think there's two Bethsaidas, one on the other side as well, but that's not for sure. The town Bethsaida means house of fishing. Now you can notice it doesn't see very clearly, but there's a little stream that comes into the top of the lake and goes out the bottom, the River Jordan. So the water coming in, that would make it a good place for fishing. The Sea of Galilee is about 13 miles long and about 7 miles wide. That would be like, I want to say, Lake Okoboji in northern Iowa or Lake Ogallala out in western Nebraska. Pretty good sized lake, and it was quite deep. It was also 695 feet below sea level. And so the mountains in the north, which fed all the water, there would be huge winds that would come down those mountains right onto the sea. So it was the weather was unpredictable, and oftentimes a storm would arise quickly. Now, as we read through today, just want to look at what is the traits of the crowd. What were they like? What were the traits of Philip, the traits of Andrew, the traits of the fish boy, and then the traits of Jesus? And on the bottom here, we have snapshots of Jesus. So on your cameras, you have a photo roll. So today we're going to do a photo roll of Jesus. Let's see if we can come up with 10 pictures of Jesus. What is he really like? All right, let's dive in, and we'll read John 6, 1 to 15, looking for these traits of Jesus. After these things, Jesus went away to the other side of the Sea of Galilee, or Tiberias. A large crowd followed him, because they saw the signs which he was performing on those who were sick. Then Jesus went up on the mountain, and there he sat down with his disciples. Now the Passover, the feast of the Jews, was near. Therefore Jesus, lifting up his eyes and seeing that a large crowd was coming to him, said to Philip, where are we to buy bread so that these may eat? This he was saying to test him, for he himself knew what he was intending to do. Philip answered him, 200 denarii worth of bread is not sufficient for them, for everyone to receive a little. One of his disciples, Andrew, Simon Peter's brother, said to him, there's a lad here who has 5 barley loaves and 2 fish, but what are they for so many people? Jesus said, have the people sit down. Now there was much grass in the place, so the men sat down, in number about 5,000. Jesus then took the loaves, and having given thanks, he distributed to those who were seated, likewise also the fish, as much as they wanted. When they were filled, he said to his disciples, gather up the leftover fragments so that nothing will be lost. So they gathered them up and filled 12 baskets with fragments from the 5 barley loaves, which were left over by those who had eaten. Therefore, when the people saw the sign which he had performed, they said, this is truly the prophet who's to come into the world. So Jesus, perceiving that they were intending to come and take him by force to make him king, withdrew again to the mountain by himself alone. Okay, you've seen this passage before. Rather than break into groups, let's just, as one big group, discuss this. What were the traits of the crowd? How would you say it? What's the crowd like?
Eager to see stuff.
Eager to see stuff. All right. Yeah. Yeah. Good. Especially miracles. Yeah. They were hoping maybe there'd be a miracle today. Yeah. Good. What else?
There's a lot of them.
There's a lot of them. And they were hungry. At least they ate. We know that. Yeah. This is the only, or this, not the only, but this feeding of the 5,000 is found in all 4 gospel writers. So it made a huge impression. And each one gives a little different nuance to it. One of the others said, Jesus said, have the people sit down in groups of 50 or 100. I think that's how they knew there were 5,000 people there. These were not Nigerians, were they? To get people to sit down in groups of 50 or 100, that would take some doing, but they did it. Okay, the traits of Philip. How would you describe Philip?
He's an accountant.
Of course he is. Why do you say?
Well, because he's the first to speak up, and he's already trying to figure the cost and the quantities. And...
yeah, okay, good. What else? What about Philip?
Pretty narrow focus.
Pretty narrow focus, yeah. Uh-huh. Is he a pessimist or a realist? Well, he's an accountant, so we don't know. He's a realist, yeah, yeah.
Being an accountant, I definitely say.
Yeah. Is it true that accountants always wear tie shoes? Is that true? I've heard that. It's not true. You don't have tie shoes. That's the theory. So Philip wore tie shoes. We know that. What about Andrew? What's he like?
He's proposing a solution.
He proposed a solution, yeah. He's trying to solve a problem here.
Did he propose a solution or did he just show an observation?
Yeah, maybe. The observation was leaning toward a solution, perhaps.
He was connected with the crowd.
Yeah. Where'd this little boy come from?
Where did all of them come from? Do you think they're here to Tiberias or Capernaum? Where did 5,000?
Well, it says it was the feast of the Passover was near. So there would be gatherings, perhaps in Capernaum, for some of the feasting. But I think the gathering was because of Jesus. They were just attracted like a moth to a light to Jesus. So I think, but this phrase here, the feast of the Passover was near. There was some gathering going on, I think. I don't know why else. But they wanted to see Jesus. I often wonder if this little boy offered his fish willingly or if Andrew said, there's a boy here who's got some fish. And the kid said, let go of me. So he was also an accountant, of course. Yeah, Andrew wanted to use the resources of somebody else. Anything else about Andrew?
Double line. There's a resource here and then there's not enough.
Yeah. Yeah. Is So he said, well, here's a boy. We got five loaves and two fish, but what good would that do with so many? So he's an optimist, and then he's a pessimist.
Paul, we know in another story, he's a connector because he's...
Good point. He's a connector. As we see, we don't have much evidence of Andrew through the Bible, but we do. Wherever he is, he's connecting people. Yeah. He's a networker. What about the fish boy? What do you make of him? We don't know his name.
He came prepared.
Yeah. His mom sent him with some food. Now think about it. If you're going to go out and see Jesus for the day, and you're traveling around maybe from Capernaum to Bethsaida, it's miles, several miles. Any good Jew always took a basket with him. In fact, the writer Barclay says that all good Jews had a kophinos, K-O-P-H-I-N-O-S. Kophinos, it's a basket about the size of a medium purse. And every good Jew would have a kophinos with him. You wouldn't go out without a basket of some kind. And so people had these baskets. Now, some writers say that this wasn't really a miracle, that when the people saw the little boy give his five barley loaves are what poor people ate. When they saw him give his five and two, everybody else shelled out and they all gave. And so this was really not a miracle. The miracle was seeing the boy be generous, and so everyone else then became generous, and it was no miracle at all. How would you respond to that? It doesn't say that, but these writers have insights that the writer didn't have. Okay, what else?
I guess I was thinking about that recently. I thought, well, that would be, so everyone got something to eat. That would kind of be the results. That would be the results of respect if everyone was just sharing from their own basket.
Yeah.
But they took up, you know, 12 big baskets full of extra pieces.
Yeah, where'd that come from? Yeah.
In fact, this is in all the Gospels. There's something astonishing about it.
There was left over. So if everyone brought their own food, you know, if I'd have brought food for Steve and then it was done, it's okay, put the extras back, well, and I'd take it home. We wouldn't collect extras.
Well, and the response of the crowd after the fact is one of not, oh, look, everybody shared. It was like, we just got a free meal from somebody who just produced and they wanted to make him king.
And that guy gave it to us and we're going to make him king, yeah. Yeah, so the evidence itself is against this idea of they just kind of shared their food and it was a miracle.
So an Andrew didn't seem to think that.
That's right. Yeah, Philip and Andrew knew nobody had food. Yeah. Now, likely people did take snacks with them. That's certainly possible. But they wouldn't have 12 basketfuls left over. Who donated the baskets? How'd they know that? Be these 12 kofinos left over of stuff. I also wonder if one of the disciples, maybe Philip, would have said, you know, that five loaves and two fish, that could have been our supper, and you're giving it away.
That's what the boy said.
Yeah, that's what the boy said. Hey, wait a
minute. I'm wondering a little bit who the boy was. Maybe he was Andrew's son. Maybe he was his nephew. It seems a little unusual that a child would be
Up near the disciples. How did Andrew know that kid had? Yeah. Maybe. We don't know. But he was around. He was near enough that they observed that he had five barley loaves and two pickled fish. The fish would be pickled. It wouldn't be fresh fish. Someone else? Okay, now, what about Jesus? What do we learn about Jesus? So, one thing I like to do is just fill in with a couple of words or a phrase in these boxes for my picture roll. So what do we know about Jesus? If this was the only Bible we had, if this was the only story of Jesus we had, what would we know about Jesus? What grabbed you as we read through? He's in charge. Yeah, he seems to command the crowd, doesn't he? Yeah, nice.
He had a plan. It's intentional.
He had a plan. Good.
Consistent with history, that there were 12 guys returning.
Yeah, what do you make of that? 12 baskets, 12 disciples, 12 tribes of Israel, 12 fingers. There's a pattern here, yeah. Interesting. Lottery, yes. The number is 12, 12, 12 for today.
Great heart for teaching.
Great heart for teaching.
Yeah, he's always leading the guys on to the next thing. What's, now think about this, what are we going to do next?
You're getting that from his question to Philip?
Yes.
Verse 6. Yes. This he was saying to test him. He knew what he was intending to do. Be careful of people who ask you a question they know the answer to.
Before it starts, it says he had performed miraculous signs in the six. So he had miraculous powers.
Mm-hmm. All right, what else do you see? This is good.
His focus on teaching was the apostles, not the 5,000.
Good insight. How'd you see that?
Well, because it was all about them having the baskets that were left over and collecting them.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so the focus was, he intended the focus to be on the 12, not the 5,000. And I saw that also in verse 3. Jesus went up on the mountain and there he sat down with his disciples, not the 5,000. He was wanting to do something with the 5,000. This incident happened just after the sending out of the 12. He sent them out two by two to the nation of Israel, didn't let them take any bread with them. It's interesting. Don't take any bread. Could have sent a lot of bread with him. He didn't send any bread with him. And this was just after the killing of John the Baptist, who had been beheaded. And he gathered together, and Matthew says, come away by yourselves to rest. So they were intending to rest. This was to be a time with the disciples. Then all these people showed up.
He did not want to be made king, brother.
Did not want to be made king. Is this any political commentary on Jesus here? Yeah, but it doesn't. Yes, true. But it doesn't look like he was interested in political ends. Could have been. This has been a great time to make an announcement speech that he was going to run for governor.
He knew it was part of a bigger picture, so the timing was.
I think it's interesting that he had him pick it up.
The leftovers.
If you have unlimited resources, that thing can usually get wasteful. It's just fascinating that pick it up. Gather it. We're not going to waste it. I'm not going to squander this, even though I could make more in a moment. We're not.
So if we were to put a little picture of Jesus, could we say Jesus the frugal or Jesus the environmentalist? They picked it up. They didn't let it lay on the ground.
I think it's more of a time issue.
Time issue?
The whole idea of wasting time is short.
Well,
speculation.
Yeah, they did. They picked up the leftovers. They didn't let them lay on the ground, even though there was more and more and more. Good insight. Okay, what else?
He was thankful.
Yeah, after the Lord had given thanks. It's interesting that he gave thanks and then the miracle began. Okay, well, I see our time's about up. Let me make a couple other observations in addition to the ones you've made here. And sometimes in doing this, thinking there's no other Bible, what do I just know from Jesus in this passage? That can be a little dangerous, but it's also stretching. I think it's good for our minds to think about Jesus in new ways. The first thing I saw, and one of my word pictures here, is Jesus had cash flow. What did he ask Philip? Where are we going to buy bread? He didn't say, Philip, what are we going to do? What are we going to do? He said, Philip, this is your town. You know Bethsaida. Where's the good bread shops here? What's that?
It wasn't
Where are we going to buy bread? With what? And Philip, the accountant, says, well, 200 denarii worth of bread isn't sufficient. Why did he come up with that figure, 200 denarii?
Must have been what was in the bag.
Very possible. Now, Jesus and the disciples had a bag. Take a look over in chapter 12, verse 6. This was where this woman took some very costly perfume and wiped the feet of Jesus with it. And Judas said, why wasn't this perfume sold and the money given to the poor? Verse 6, chapter 12. He said this not because he was concerned about the poor, but because he was a thief, and as he had the money box, he used to pilfer what was put into it. The 12 had a money box. The Greek word is glossokomen, G-L-O-S-S-O-K-O-M-E-N. Glossokomen, it means a box that holds the reed of a woodwind instrument. Even in those days, they knew they had to protect the reed of an instrument. So they had a little box, and the disciples must say, hey, that'd make a good box for carrying our money around. They had money. In John chapter 4, verse 8, Jesus is talking to the woman at the well, Samaria. He was alone with her because the disciples had gone into town to buy bread. Jesus could have, he had just turned water into wine a few chapters earlier. They went into town to buy bread. Jesus had cash flow. One of the questions I like to ask the Africans, and Noel Awar and I do this at every seminar, said, was Jesus poor or was Jesus rich? If he was poor, how poor? If he was rich, how rich? It's interesting to think about. A lot of people make the assumption that Jesus was a wandering beggar, homeless. Maybe, but they had cash flow, and they seemed to have a fair amount of it. So that's, where did they get that money?
From the women.
From the women. All right. Luke 8, 1 to 3. Luke 8, 1 to 3. The second box I filled in was Jesus cared for both physical needs and spiritual needs. Jesus cared for both physical needs and spiritual needs. He had compassion on the multitude, but he didn't meet all their physical needs. In Luke, it says, the 12 said, send the crowd away to the villages so they can find lodging and something to eat. Jesus didn't say anything about their lodging here. He didn't heal anybody. He just took care of one of their physical needs on this day. He could have taken care of all their physical needs, but he chose to limit himself on this day. Jesus cared for their physical needs. That's important. He also cared for their spiritual needs. We see that in verse 6. This he was saying to test him. He knew what he was intending to do. What was he trying to test Philip on? Philip, where are we going to buy bread? Any good bread shops here in town? You know the area. He wasn't really asking about bread. He wanted to see what Philip was thinking. Later on in verse 26, truly I say to you, you seek me not because you saw signs, but because you ate the loaves and were filled. Do not work for the food which perishes, but for the food which endures to eternal life. So Jesus also has on his mind their spiritual well-being. Jesus saw both the physical need and the spiritual need. What is a disciple? I've redefined a disciple in my own mind. A disciple of Christ, is someone who thinks like Jesus thinks. That's it. The word disciple means learner. Who thinks like Jesus thinks. Remember those bracelets a few years ago? What would Jesus do? WWJD. I think an even better one is WWJT. What would Jesus think? Thinking leads to doing. Okay, the third box is Jesus can do a lot with a little. Jesus can do a lot with a little. 5 little barley loaves, 2 little pickled fish, 12 baskets left over. I think Fish Boy went home pretty happy that day. He gave 5 and 2. He took away a lot more. In the Old Testament, about the year 500 AD, some of the Jews were coming back from the land of Persia, which is now Iraq, and they were going to rebuild the temple. There was great sadness because they were rebuilding the temple. It wasn't nearly as big as the previous one. It wasn't like David's temple. It was a kind of a little dinky thing. And some of the older men were even weeping at how small it was. Let's turn to Zechariah chapter 4, verse 10. If you can find Zechariah, it's just on the left of Malachi. We don't often get to look a verse in Zechariah, so let's go ahead and look at Zechariah chapter 4, verse 10. So the people were sad. Oh, this is nothing. This is not as big as the other temple. This is not the glory of Israel. Zechariah 4, 9. The hands of Zerubbabel have laid the foundation of this house. His hands will finish it. Then you will know that the Lord of hosts has sent me. For who has despised the day of small things? Boy, the first time I saw that passage, I thought, yes. Yes. Small things. Who has despised the day? Do not despise the day of small things. You may feel like what you would offer the Lord is not even 5 loaves or 2 fish. I sometimes think, my contribution is so dinky. Is this just this little thing? How did the gospel get into Nepal? Does anyone know? There were some doctors in a nearby country. I think it was Burma or India. I'm not quite sure which one. I can't remember. But they had been working hard for several years and decided that they were needed a break. They were going to go to Nepal and just take a break. No one had ever been there much from the West. And they were all bird watchers, these doctors. And so they thought, let's go to Nepal and start to catalog the birds because it's never been done. We've never cataloged the birds in Nepal. So they went, they'd spend a few days bird watching, and they noticed that the people had some medical needs. So at the end of the day, they'd set up a table and they'd treat some patients on their vacation, bird watching. And that's how the gospel got into Nepal. Very little thing, very tiny thing. It's a vacation. When I was playing baseball in South Dakota, I shared the gospel with a guy who said, my father, and he did this, he said, my father is a Methodist minister. I thought, okay, that's fine with me. Later on in Albuquerque, in AAA, he became a believer, and later on played with the Minnesota Twins, and his name was Jeff Zahn. He and I became friends. My little thing that day of sharing the gospel with him, which he even rejected, I don't know what kind of contribution it had. It had some contribution toward his coming to Christ. It was a little thing. Think of all the little things that are done every day in the name of Christ. And you have little things that you do too. Don't discount them. Who has despised the day of small things? Jesus can do a lot with a little, but you got to give it to him. Our job is to give him our stuff. His job is to multiply it. Let's not get those reversed, shall we? You can't multiply it, and he won't take your stuff unless you give it. The third thing I see here is Jesus wasn't always with people. Verse 15. He withdrew again to the mountain by himself alone. Underscore alone. Alone. There's an old poet, George Herbert, said, by all means use sometimes to be alone. Dare to look within thine own chest and tumble up and down what thou findest there, for 'tis thine own. By all means, use some time to be alone. We live in such a busy, frantic culture. Take a look at Luke 5:16, and then we'll close. Luke 5:16. But Jesus himself would often slip away to the wilderness and pray. Wow. Jesus himself often, I've underscored that. Slip away, I've underscored that. Wasn't a big fanfare. Where's Jesus? I don't know. He was here a minute ago. He slipped away to the wilderness. To the wilderness. And he prayed. There's something about getting out in the wilderness that is just good for us. I think especially men in America today, we need to get into the wilderness once in a while. Now, the wilderness may be a beautiful place like this, but it's away from people. It's away from the hustle and bustle of everyday life. Often, it was a habit of Jesus' life. Often. And then when he was there, he prayed. Now, I confess that sometimes when I get away to the wilderness, I sleep. And that might be okay, just to get caught up. We are human beings, after all. Sleep and pray and be alone with the Father. Now, I'm going to tell you my customs, which is not necessarily for you, but I just want to give you a model of something that might work. Someone said to me a long time ago that made a lot of sense. An oasis every day, an oasis every week, an oasis every year. I like that. I think Jesus was like that. Often slipped away. So an oasis every week. That could be church attendance. That would be fine. But also I find that I like to have Sunday afternoons alone with the Lord. So on Sunday afternoons, we have no kids in the house anymore. I go swimming for a while, which I don't like to do. I'm afraid of drowning. I'm Not a very good swimmer, but I go. And then I have time alone with the Lord. Then an oasis every day. I don't know about you, but I try to keep a journal because I find that I have the attention span of an adolescent grasshopper. And I'm always boinging around here and there. And so I need to have a list. So I write three things. 3, 2, 3. 3 praises, 2 confessions, and 3 thankses. Now, I might get no further than that during the day. I might have 3 minutes with the Lord. But I'm going to praise first. I didn't used to praise first. I used to ask first. I need this, I need this, I need this, I need this, I need this. Now I'm disciplining myself to say 3 praises, even though at first they're mechanical. And then once I praise, then of course I got to confess. Because I realize once I start praising God, I realize who I am. Then I confess. And I try to think of 2 sins. I can often think of more. But I don't drag it out. It's too discouraging. And then 3 thanks. There's something about saying thank you that just... we cannot be bitter people if we're saying thank you. It's impossible. It's impossible to be discouraged if we're saying thank you. So some days I do that and nothing more. So that's every day, every week, and then once a year I try to have 2 or 3 days... just by myself. I check into a motel or something up in the mountains. And I used to have a big agenda. I got to get all these things done and all this work stuff. And now my agenda's gone down. And I say, Lord, I'm going to be there with you and the devil. And I hope the devil leaves after about a half an hour. But I'm going to be there with you, whatever you want to say to me. But I'm planning on praising and enjoying you. My wife, Elma, made a good comment to me one time. I said, what shall I expect from this time? She said, just let the Lord minister to you. Wow, I want to be ministered to. So that's another box, is Jesus was often alone. Okay, what stands out to you on the bottom here? Application. One of the things I like about the Navigators is we're always saying, okay, let's put it into practice. What stands out to you? I'll give you a minute. Just put a circle around something or jot something down. What stands out to you from this little story of the 5,000? Okay, let's pray together. Father, thank you so much for this wonderful story. We thank you that this is not fiction, but this really happened. 12 baskets left over. We are amazed. We thank you that you gave the people as much as they wanted, not as much as they deserved, but as much as they wanted. We thank you that you are a generous God. At the same time, we thank you that you're frugal. You picked up the leftovers. Thank you for that. Thank you that you can turn 5 and 2 into enough to feed 5,000 people. So, Father, we today give you our little 5 loaves and our 2 fishes. We give them to you and ask that you would multiply them for the good of your kingdom. In Jesus' name, amen.